Tune in to the hottest sports talk show
on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio.
Join us weekdays at 7 p.m. Stories about players and coaches of all levels. We make it easy to talk sports.
Welcome to Never Had It So Good Sports Talk Radio. That was a good half hour there with Coach Glenn DeVoe of CampLyman.com. We're always happy to get him on here and just to talk about what he's doing and where they're going. Their new schedule for 2023 was just made live on their website. Again, CampLyman.com. Go ahead and check them out. It all starts up front is their motto. Welcome to the show. Thank you, Coach Duck. We're not going to try to get a score or any of that prediction for the game in this hour, okay? We're going to leave that alone.
Hey, President, that's like, y'all triple team, and y'all even try to get my homeboy in on it. All right, no problem.
Yeah. We tried to get Tim. He tried to remain, because of you, though, he really tries to remain middle of the road. You know, he said he just didn't know that much. And Tim knows that not true. He knows everything about everything, but okay, Tim, more.
Don't worry. My boy K World made up for it. That's okay.
Yeah, K World came on out there, so. And by the way, yesterday, listeners, Duck told me to stop telling me that nobody cares about the recruiting for Florida. Nobody cares who's committing, any of that. So today I just sent him some pictures. I didn't send him any commitment stuff of the new facility. And he just sat back shaking my head. So, but Duck, I thought I would continue this throughout the week, if it's okay with you.
Oh, man. Okay.
All right.
You know, it just kind of reminds me of somebody being born in Georgia. That's all. That's what it reminds me of.
Oh, my gosh. Please don't wake that up. Please don't wake that one up. And I don't even understand that part. But I guess we'll find out in the next hour on Sports Talk Atlanta. Let's get everybody in here for sure. 1071, give us your name.
This is Will Lewis. Greetings, everybody.
What's up, Will?
All right.
Awesome. Okay, all right. Let's get in 8617. 8617, give us your name. Last four of your phone number, 8617.
Hey, guys, how you doing? This is Don Jones.
Hey, Coach Jones, how are you?
What's up, Coach?
Hey, I'm doing well, man. I'm blessed.
Awesome. All right, let's go ahead and get in 3434. Give us your name, sir.
Hey, Princess, how are you doing? this is Ricky. It's just you and I today, right? Nobody else is. I didn't, you know, Don, Will, nobody else is on here, but it's just us, right?
Duh. What's different about that?
No Don, no Will, no Duck. It's just you and I.
Amen. I want you to know, Ricky Porter, we talk about you all week leading up into this point. Oh. And Duck imitates you. Hey, Princess, how you doing?
Duck, you know, you my man, Duck. You know that.
I appreciate you, brother. I appreciate you.
All right, let's go ahead and get in 2762. Last four of your phone number, 2762. Give us your name.
Hi, this is Jay Hayes.
Hey, Coach.
What's up, Jay?
Hi, how y'all doing?
We're good. We have on Will Lewis and Coach Donald Jones and Duck, and then we have on Ricky Porter.
Oh,
man.
How Ricky getting the last bill? Okay.
That's okay, hey, Princess. That's okay. Princess, that's okay. Don't listen to Duck.
Don't worry, Ricky. Don't worry. Okay, Rick, Duck, you can take over. Is that okay, Ricky, if Duck takes over right now? Is that okay?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
We got to give him a little
Duck.
Love.
All right. I'm going to start off with my man, Coach Jones here. Agree, disagree with Nick Saban about recruiting, throwing Dion and Jimbo under the bus.
Oh yeah, I disagree with that because, you know, if you look at the whole thing, what he was trying to do, he was at a booster club meeting trying to raise money, so he was trying to let all his people with deep pockets know that in order to continue to compete, he needs more money for this NIL type stuff, and he kind of over exaggerated by trying to, you know, call out, you know Texas A&M and Deion's kid, the Travis Hunter kid. But, you know, but I totally disagree with that, you know, what he said. But that's what he was trying to do. You know, there's a method to the genius over there, man. He's a method to everything he does is calculated, you know. And,
yeah.
You know, but I totally disagree with how he did it, though. He shouldn't have called out, you know, another player because he had no – you know, he wasn't accurate in his claims. You know, but he's probably accurate about Texas A&M though. But they got deep pockets over there. I know that for a fact. I know some kids went over there. So, but he was just trying to rally for more money. I mean, that's exactly what he was doing. And he should have left out the names. He should have just kept it. He could have made his points without calling out names, put it that way. And I thought he overstood his bounds when he did that.
Okay, Ricky, no more Aflac commercials with Dion because of this. What's your thought?
You know, I don't know about all that, Duck, but I'm with Don on this one. I totally disagree with it. I just think that it's a money thing. It's trying to stand out. Then, you know, he believes. He's like, Saban is like, you know, the Teflon Don. He just believes nothing can stick to him. He feel he is the king of his castle or the whole castle. He thinks he runs collegiate football, and what he says is gospel. And I think he just does that because he feels that he can't do any wrong. I think he's totally wrong for throwing them under the bus like that. As Don said, it may be some truth to the Texas A&M thing. But with Dion, he just sees that it's another angle that nobody else is able to do because this is a HBCU doing it. And he has to feel like when he losing players, you know, number one player in the country to Jackson State, he has to throw a little shame out there and throw him under the bus and do all this trying to discredit. You know, if he really wanted to say what he wanted to say, I mean, I'm glad he didn't, but he probably really wanted to say a lot more about the HBCUs and put them down to where try to keep all kids from going there. But I think, you know, what he did is not cool, and it's going to catch up to him. And I like the fact that Jimbo kind of called him out. So Jimbo is not afraid of him, even though he coached with him or coached for him. So I think it's going to be an ongoing war. And basically they got to knock the king off the throne because, you know, they're winning down there at Alabama. So we'll see what happens.
Okay. Jay, it's same question, you know. Nick and Jimbo both are from West Virginia, and you think it's going to be heated when they play each other this year?
Oh, it's going to be heated for sure. But you know, the bottom line is, unless Jimbo can beat him, you know, there's not a lot he can do. You know. And having been in college football a long time ago, you know, my history of recruiting and things like that. I always let other people do what they wanted to do because, you know, we did what we wanted to do. And, you know, it's never good to call people out and cast the first stone because ye without sin, you know. It's hard to get through all that. You know, you got to be able to, at the end of the day, beat Nick on the field. And, you know, maybe Jimbo can do it this year. Maybe he can't. You know, it's hard to say. I know he did bark back at him. And, you know, I think, as have a lot of people, you know, just kind of know that all those kids aren't going to Alabama just because of the history. You know, they've been getting paid. I've worked at places where people would complain about, well, how'd they get this guy, how'd they get that guy, you know. But college football is a slippery slope, and you know, there's a lot of things that'll happen. But the bottom line is if Jimbo doesn't beat him, then, you know, Nick has that up on him. So he beats him.
Okay. Will, you heard what Coach Jones has said about the being calculated and stuff. So we know Nick has been controversial. And Tim Moore last night brought up an interesting point. When they were doing the fast-paced offense, Nick was the one that complained that it wasn't giving the defense enough time to kind of set the defense because of how fast the offense was going. And what are your thoughts about that? You know, the old school, I guess, kind of old school versus what's happening now with the NIL.
Well, I mean, I think the game keeps on progressing, and certainly. To be the king of college coaches, you found a way to adjust each and every year. And sometimes making that adjustment is slowing down progress, you know, to fit what you do. And I think Saban has been as good at that as anybody in the business. And I mean, he's obviously a good X's and O's coach and has good coaches on his staff and recruits the best players in the country. But sometimes the rules slow you down a little bit, and I think he's just wily enough, smart enough to figure out how to put a plug in to slow some things down to keep progress from moving too fast, you know, a little bit too fast for him, and giving him a chance to kind of adjust to it all. So there's different ways of remaining on top, and he's figured out a lot of different ways. Some of that has to do with recruiting. Some of it has to do with, you know, his personality. Some of it has to do with his influence. You know, so, yeah, I guess the guy's been winning and people haven't stopped him on the field, so I think he can keep on getting away with stuff.
Okay. Do we have Tim on?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Tim, same question. You know, you hear what Will said. We're still stuck on Nick rolling these guys under the bus.
Well, you know, he's been very successful with staying relevant for a long time at a high level from his Michigan State days. I mean, he had Michigan State at the top of the Big Ten heap for a couple of years while he was there, and Toledo before that in the MAC. So he stood the test of time. But a part of that, I think, is shown in the last couple of years where he's had difficulty adjusting to the no-huddle offenses and the hurry-up schemes that teams have played, you know, him being a defensive coach at heart. And now with the NIL and that kind of thing, that's a sea change in college sports. And I think he sort of, you know, sounded the call. I think Carlos may have said it last night, sounded the call to his boosters that if Texas A&M is going to be spending all this this money and other schools are spending money, you know, supporting these players, then I need you all at Alabama to step up. I think that's what it was all about.
Okay. Francis, I want to see if you want to say anything about your favorite coach, Nick Saban.
Duck, I was trying to stay. Oh, I was trying to stay away from this. I was hoping you wouldn't ask me, but I agree with everybody on here in that I think he's calculated, or you know, he knew what he was doing, and I think he was trying to make some noise at the fan event, and he did that. I don't know if he counted on it getting out so quickly, or the backlash he got. I don't know if he counted on that, but he meant to say what he said, and I think he is concerned about the NIL because I think they've been doing that off the books for quite some time, and now everybody has just made it legal. So, you know, right. Whatever Nick Saban, but you know, that's just it. Everybody's catching up with him, and I just don't. I'm surprised that he stayed on top so long. You got to give him his due. But I hope somebody knocks him off real soon, besides Kirby Smart. Do you hear me, Billy Napier? Please, Billy Napier.
Okay, here we go with the floor. Okay, a plug for whatever that team is. All right, Will, coming back to you, do you like the direction of the HBCU, the direction it's going?
Somebody's on mute. That wasn't towards me, was it? Were you?
No, that's towards Will Lewis. He might be on the phone with Dion. Hold on.
Oh boy.
Well, I see him on the board, so I don't. Maybe he. I don't know.
He's on mute.
I don't know.
All right, well.
I just found the phone with Dion. So I just wanted to double check. I just wanted to make sure, yeah, that we're all going in the same direction. I think to answer your question about the direction that the HBCUs are going in. And sometimes it's not even across the board. But there are a couple of programs that are, I think, reaping some of the benefit. And obviously, you know, Jackson State is one of them, and then we'll see how Tennessee State does with Eddie George and some of the traditional schools down there as well. But, I mean, I like that they're getting a lot more attention. I like that you're getting bigger-time athletes coming back to the HBCU. I like that the competition is driving some of the Power Five schools nuts because they're losing guys and they can't figure out why they're losing them. They just can't figure out why they would want to go to an HBCU instead of going to, an Alabama or Florida. I think that the popularity is coming back around like it used to be back in the day where you had some of the best athletes in multiple businesses going to or multiple sports, multiple businesses going to the HBCU, identifying a quality education, not just, you know, sports-wise, but being able to identify the quality education that you get from an HBCU. And then also, because we're in the sports business, appreciating that there's bigger-time athletes coming out of the HBCUs. I like where it's going. You hope that the it continues in that direction. You hope that at some point, a lot of the small schools get paid to play some of those bigger schools. So I kind of like to see that as well, which brings, you know, money to your program and also brings an identity to your program as well. So I kind of like to see that a little bit more as well.
Okay, Jay, how can we balance this stuff out? Because we know the driving force is money, but we can't get not anything but ESPN Plus, which everybody doesn't get, and We have a few ESPN. Every once in a while, CBS, NBC will do a game.
You're asking with HBCUs how you can balance it?
Yes, yeah, strictly HBCU. We're trying to balance it out, TV revenue, money, you know, with ESPN plus current games. You know, basically how much can they really get out of that? So I'm just kind of putting it out there, just kind of see maybe your thought process with that.
Well, you know, I don't know that you could ever really balance it out. You know, the population, the African-American population in the whole United States is maybe 12%, or, you know, you're talking 12 to 13% or somewhere in there. And so then you just have to have crossover. Back years before we were born, you know, the HBCUs got the majority of the African-American players to go play. You know, my father always told me stories of when he was playing at Virginia Union and going to tournaments in Richmond, and, you know, with basketball and football, just all those kinds of things. And, you know, talking to my cousins how they used to go watch Earl the Pearl play, and, you know, in their conference and all that stuff. But there's been such a migration from the HBCUs up until this point. I mean, all of a sudden, some of the student athletes are making a switch, but still, when you look at the majority of the heavily recruited blue chip players, and, you know, they list their schools, they're still, the majority of them are the Power Five schools. And, you know, there's only a handful of guys who have the courage to really say, well, I'm going to strike a different path and go to an HBCU for whatever reason, you know, culturally, or I'm going to stay with my people or that type of thing. But, you know, HBCUs now have you look at it, and I have friends that are coaching at HBCUs. They have a lot of, you know, non-black players on their teams. And you know, so there is a big mix of, a lot bigger mix, you know, the old movie White Tiger, when they had the white quarterback at Grambling and all that back in the 60s. I mean, there's a little more of that going on, and there are kids that, white kids that want to go play at HBCUs too. So, but balancing it out with the money is going to be hard. I don't see the draw that financially the big networks will play, you know, the HBCU games on NBC, ABC, ESPN, you know, consistently, so that the schools can draw and make money like the Power Five schools do.
Okay. Rick, another part of that, you know, are we going in the right direction because of now they have the HBCU combine, and then you have the Indianapolis combine. Kind of explain that to me, if you can.
Well, Doug, I think they're going in the right direction. I appreciate what, you know, Deion is doing. I appreciate what Eddie George is doing. One thing we got to remember is that Deion, when he was prime time and he did all that, and he kind of made a name for himself, people fail to realize that he was one of the best players in the world at that time, you know, or becoming the best player in the world. So it wasn't just his mouth and his attitude and all that that got him. It took him to another level. That's the same thing he's doing with the HBCUs. He's talking them up. He's doing things. He's going out and convincing these young kids, African-American kids, to come to these schools. And but I believe that he – what we got to realize is that Deion was talented. The talent level has to come up, or I don't think it'll, the money or anything will ever be equal. Facilities, things like that. Some of you know, you take HBCU's facilities, they don't even compare it to some of the MAC schools or even some Division II schools. And I think that's the thing. And when you take our African-American kids and bring them on, you take them walk on Alabama's campus or USC's campus or UCLA or LSU's campus, and then you walk at, you know, Alcorn or Morgan State or, you know, Alabama A&M, Southern, it's a big difference. And the kids want to go to these schools. That's going to be the thing. That's the thing we're fighting right now. How can we get these kids? And like I don't know if it was Jay or somebody said that you just got to get the kids that just want to step out and do something, do it different. Or, you know, I always like the saying Denzel Washington said, and you asked him why J.D., his son, went to HBCU. He told him, you can go anywhere you want, but my money's going to, I can't remember school, I think he went to Morehouse or something, going to Morehouse. Well, that's where he, you know, that's where parents just stepped in and said, we're going to support our black universities. But a lot of kids right now, when you are that talented and things like that, you look at these schools, you get a, you know, you're one of the top kids in the country and you visit some of these facilities and you see their training tables and, I mean, just the whole thing, it's hard. And so I think Deion's doing the best thing he can to bring some notoriety and show that we have a good product here, not only on the field, but they got to really implement the educational part of it, that you can get a sound, good education from HBCU. And the thing also that Jay said is that, you know, white kids now are starting to go to the HBCU, or they've been going, but they're starting to go more. Well, there's a couple of reasons why they go. They feel comfortable there. That's their culture. They, you know, they've been around it. Or either a lot of times it's because they, it's the reverse there. They can get minority scholarships. And sometimes they, I mean, let's call it what it is. They have a chance to go there, a good athlete, and they can't get into, you know, the bigger schools, or the bigger schools are not recruiting them heavily. So they say, well, you know, they're going to give me a few dollars to go to Jackson State or Southern. I'm going to go there, you know, and help them. So, you know, this is one of those things that I don't know if it will ever be equal, just because of the facilities and things like that. And like I told you, you know, when we talk about these type of subjects, every Saturday afternoon when the games start, college football, which I love this, I love Saturdays to watch college football, just about 9 out of the 10 games you watch, you're probably going to be watching almost an HBCU game. You might have Auburn and Tennessee playing. Well, you might have 8 to 10 starters on defense and 8 or 9 starters on offense that are African-American. And so really what you're watching is an HBCU that just happened to be at the big schools. The black kids are playing at these big schools, and that's why they're going out and recruiting them and getting them. And these kids, you like anything else, especially as the generation has changed now. These kids are going for that show me the money kind of thing. Show me the, you know, the facilities and all the good things. And, you know, and that's why, you know, it's hard to get a top-rated kid to go to a HBCU. Will it change? Hopefully with some of the flash and dash that Deion is doing now, and maybe getting a few other coaches in there, Eddie George, get this thing rolling. Maybe you get our kids to say, you know what, I'm going to go there. But ultimately, and I'll cut this short now, ultimately, like I said, Deion, he had the mouth of the South. He could, you know, he was prime time. But Deion could play. He's bringing that to these HBCUs, but they got to be able to play and put a great product on the field in order for these televisions and things like that to put them on Saturday afternoons.
Okay. Princess, HBCU, you attended HBCU. Why?
You know, I attended, Duck, because my guidance counselor said, what about Spelman College? And I investigated and thought it was good for me to go away to school, and then I got an academic scholarship instead of an athletic scholarship. So, and it changed my life. I'm so glad that I did that, and then I came back to the University of Florida to further my studies. But, and I love what Will Lewis had to say, all of the wins and the checklists and where we're going as far as getting more sponsorships and trying to improve the training facilities. But the bottom line is this. Alabama's athletic budget is $180 million. Nick Saban's salary is $9 million. Jackson State's entire athletic budget is $8 million. His salary is $300,000.
Wow.
And his salary is $300,000, and he said, I'm going to give half of my salary back so you can finish out one of the buildings and the facilities because they don't have enough money to finish it out. And
wow.
As long as we continue to have those type of disparities, we're going to be behind the eight ball. And it's 2022, and it really saddens me that we have to go, FAMU is playing Auburn or somebody else to open up the season, we have to go and get and play these teams and sacrifice these young men's bodies to get a big payment. South Carolina State went and played Clemson 2 years ago, and they asked for a running clock in the second half. They asked, you know, Dabo, hey, why a running clock in the second half? And he said, well, Buddy Pough's people came and asked for it.
Wow.
To me, that's embarrassing, and I hope that we as, you know, in HBCUs, I know we've come a long way, but the fact that we celebrated that one young man commitment to Jackson State, and we made a big deal of it for 2 months, I hope that we can have it on a regular, that we don't have to make it a big deal, and until we get the talent, the money won't come, and if the money's not there, the talent isn't coming. Which one, the chicken or the egg?
Okay. Tim, great. I want to come to you with, you know, the same thing. I'm just looking at that, you know, as far as recruiting, the budget, you hear what Princess said about the salary and stuff like that. What is your take on the HBCU? Because I see that, you know, Jackson State is out front. You hear a little bit about Tennessee State. But what about Mississippi Valley, your Alcorn State, your Tuskegee, you know, Alabama State, what's happening with those programs?
I think it's going to be, as a lot of guests have already touched on some of this, I think it's going to be difficult for a lot of them unless we have more people who have some name recognition, who follow Deion and Eddie George's example, who want to be into coaching and who are willing to bite the bullet and commit themselves for several years to HBCUs. It might have been Coach Jay who mentioned, you know, his understanding of the history of HBCUs and how for many, many years, unless you went to the Big Ten or the Pac-10, the top-level talent, African-American ballplayers, were at HBCUs, and they were filling up the NFL, particularly the AFL, with talent at the highest level back then. But we've got a generation of kids now who are growing up who have no sense that of what that was like, not being able to go to these big schools because they've never experienced it. In their lifetime, they've always seen the 8 and 9 players that it may have been Will who was talking about who were you know, at the HBCUs. I mean, who are at the major colleges, the Alabamas, the Clemsons. They're used to seeing 8 and 9 African American starters on those teams. They're used to seeing those players. So they don't understand. Some of them may not even know that just 40 years ago, Alabama didn't have a black player. Clemson didn't have a black player. The whole conference, the ACC, the SEC, the SWC, had maybe one black player on their team. So they don't know that. So we get a generation whose whole perspective is different. And to win them over, it's going to be a little bit more difficult because that history is not there with them. The sponsorships are going to help. Someone getting in their ear, like a Dion, like an Eddie George, who has had success, who can say to them, this is important for you educationally, this is important for you culturally, and you can still make it from here, is going to be needed in the recruitment process. And I think that some of the other schools, the Alabama States, the Alcorns, the Prairie Views, and Florida A&Ms, and some of those other schools really are going to have someone come in and head their program with some name recognition in order to change the minds of these kids beyond what Jackson State and Tennessee State are starting to do. I think one of our guests mentioned that it's never going to be, I don't think, on an exactly equal playing field because we've gone down that road so far now, and you can't put the genie back in the bottle. Prince has pointed out that Nick Saban's salary is more than Jackson State's entire football budget. So those are realities that we've got to deal with. But I think they're starting to move in the right direction, but you have to educate these kids to the fact that it hasn't been that long ago that the schools that they see dominated by African-American athletes didn't have any. And it wasn't because they didn't go there. It's because these schools and it wasn't because they weren't good enough to be recruited at these schools. Bear Bryant knew that there were players in Alabama that could have played for Alabama, but their alumni would not allow them. And they've never dealt with that kind of blatant disrespect and dislike from the larger majority, except for just in the past few years when the political climate of the world has changed to the point where people are more blatant about it, like they're starting to get blatant about it like they were in the 1960s.
Okay. Donald Jones, we're talking about moving in the right direction. For a while, the NFL with the draft, we thought we're moving in the right direction, drafting some, you know, a lot of the kids out of HBCU. But for the last few years, all the way up to last year, 2021, they drafted zero. And this year, I don't know exactly the number that they drafted, but it wasn't much. Your thoughts on that, moving in the right direction?
It's kind of hits home for me a little bit because I've been covering each weekend. We cover, you know, my media company. We cover at least one HBCU game a year. We've been doing this since 2014, even before all the recent popularity. So I've watched a lot of talent come through there, and I've watched the programs and how they, and how they've, struggled, basically, up until lately here. And but I think, as someone mentioned earlier, is that, Deion has brought a lot of – he's brought so much he's given it notoriety. He's given it so much more markability. And also, not just Deion, you got guys like Stephen Curry who donated, a couple million to the golf program. I think the publicity that's gotten it, since the social the racial injustice that was going on, that's brought a lot of companies, are starting to see the need there in HBCUs, but I think it's definitely moving in the right direction. I think it's gotten a lot better, and a lot of that is due to, number one, Deion. He's brought a lot of notoriety, and also, since the racial injustice, and all the the Black Lives Matter movement, and so a lot of these corporations have donated to the HBCUs, of late. How can they keep their momentum going? I don't know. Hopefully they can, but I think in order for any sustainability to happen, I think it's going to take a It's going to take, you know, a. I think it's going to take a black-owned business that has the money, you know, you know, to really fall behind, you know, these schools. I mean, I think that's, you know, and there are some black corporations out there that got money. It has the money to do it. I mean, there are groups that are trying to buy the NFL. There are groups, you know, like Byron Allen's group, for an example. I mean, yeah, I mean, that dude's got big-time dollars, you know, and I think it's going to take, you know, a donor like that, you know, to have the money, and you see the disparity that Princeton has talked about. I think it's going to take an entity, you know, that with those kind of pockets that's going to give, you know, and that's going to support it, you know, that's going to, you know, improve the facilities. I mean, I think it's going to take something like that, you know, or a professional athlete. I mean, you know, you look at Travis Hunter. He was able to, you know, this one black-owned bank, you know, has just, you know, took him on in the NIL deal. So Saban's probably not too off, you know, for his name. He's probably right up there now, not too far from it. But it's going to take, you know, let's say for instance a company wants to, you know, support these schools for NIL deals, and you could bring in five superstar athletes, you pay them. You know, you pay them, you know, six-digit figures. You know, you'll get five. I mean, you know, you can get some top players to come in there. I mean, that's, you know, so it's different ways you can do it. It's going to take time, but you know, but it's going to take somebody that's going to be willing to invest. You know, it's going to take money. There's no way around it. It's going to take money. You got to figure out a way to bring it into the program. And you know, and I think, you know, only then you'll find a level of consistency and sustainability in the HBCUs as far as the growth wise you talked about.
Okay, I'm gonna stay right with you. Go ahead, Jack. Yeah.
You know, we're talking about all this with HBCUs and the Power Fives and all this, but bottom line is you're talking about FBS versus FCS. All the HBCUs are FCS Division I AA schools. And uh-huh. As we all know, you know, I played at one AA school. But, you know, they just don't have the funds that you're talking about when you're talking about the FCS schools, the land-grant universities. Throughout the country, and you know that there's a big disparity between the two divisions. They're both Division One, but one is one AA and one is 1A. And the funds that they get federally from donors, from all, you know, all the above, just outlasts the funds that schools in FCS get. And if you can look through the FCS, and there are HBCUs that are going in white conferences and playing, you know, Kennesaw State and Tennessee State are playing in white conference schools and have left their traditional MEAC and left the SWAC and those types of things. So, you know, I don't know that it'll ever balance out, because unless an HBCU, the only school that I've ever heard even contemplating going Division I is Alabama State recently. And other than that, you know, because somehow Alabama State has the funding that they could possibly do it. I don't know of any other school that has the funding to even try to go Division I.
Okay.
Yeah, Doug, Coach mentioned something, and I think he's right. I don't think we can recruit using just finances as the issue, because I don't think the finances ever were available to HBCUs, even when they were producing the top flight.
societal issues were the thing that caused the HBCUs to flourish back in the 60s and sometimes in the early 70s. It was because they couldn't go to those other schools. Now that they can go, I think we have to appeal to the young men on a consciousness kind of level. The NILs are going to help a little bit. The facilities are going to help a little bit. They'll never have Ohio State facilities. They'll never have Alabama facilities. But if you can appeal to them, their consciousness, and create an environment where they understand that they can make it from that level of ball. And if the TV networks will open up their eyes a little bit and their willingness to broadcast some of those games, those are the kind of things that are going to appeal to the kids and convince them to maybe consider an HBCU. It's not going to be the money, because that'll never be equal.
Okay, I'm coming back to you, Donald Jones. You heard what Jay said about some of the schools are going to some of the white conferences, per se. What about the MEAC that has less than seven teams? Who would be the next team to leave, and why?
Oh, wow. Who would be the next team to leave? Because A&T left, and I believe Hampton left too, right?
Correct.
Yeah. The next team. Wow. I would. The next team that would leave, you know, I would probably lean towards North Carolina Central, maybe, because the AT&T and that rivalry is so close. As a matter of fact, they got the big game here. They still playing. They're gonna be playing at Panther Stadium, Bank of America Stadium here pretty soon. But if they leave, where are they going to go? Is their demand? It could be. At that lower level, FCS, FBS role, D1 AA, as I call it. Is there demand for them? But I think that's a tough question, man. About who would be the next one to leave. We've got to look at the options. Is there anywhere for them to go? Is there any demand for any of those schools? As far as winning-wise, South Carolina State is the one that's really doing the winning, but their location, it's going to be hard. It's probably going to be hard for any of the HBCU schools to go. North Carolina A&T and Hampton is like, the cream, they're probably like the cream of the crop, right? Those are the schools that are being successful in the A&T, their track team, they be competing for the national championship every year. They have that name and brand recognition that I think is what, helped them get another deal. But I think it's, what are the options out there would be the question I would ask. The Big South maybe, may need a team, but I don't know, man. That's a tough question for me to answer. I think I might have to pass that one over to somebody else, because I'm struggling with that one.
Okay. Will, same question.
Yeah, I mean, it's unfortunate that you've got to move and you've got to break it down or break it up and schools kind of move along to do what they got to do. But if I looked at it from a strictly talent level, because when you look at the draft or you look at free agents that have signed, you look at even rankings, I guess if you looked at the rankings, to me, South Carolina State would be the most logical team, just because, even as you look at free agents right now that could play in the league, you see there's always a couple of them that show up from South Carolina State, and I think it's always been like that historically, whether they've gotten an opportunity or not. But I think there's always been a good amount of talent at that particular school. I think the other schools, you know, I mean, Delaware State and Norfolk, and, you know, even Morgan State, and I say Morgan State for a specific reason. But even those every now and then will flash, you know, a guy or flash a player that could play at a higher level. But I think just historically, South Carolina State always has somebody that can play. So that's why I would go with South Carolina State, just from a talent perspective.
Okay, Tim.
Yeah, Doug, right, sorry. For a second. Yeah, I'm here. I'll say I think, you know, and I'm looking at it from a marketing perspective, you know, Howard University is right there in the Washington, D.C. metro. I think they probably make some sense in terms of that Colonial Athletic Conference. They just lost James Madison out of that conference last year, moved up to the big level. So I think Howard might make some sense because they're in a major metropolitan center. I think Will mentioned South Carolina State from a competitive standpoint on the field, but again, it may have been him that mentioned where they're located too, and their ability to draw and be competitive. In terms of the overall athletic department financially. So I would think Howard would probably be the most logical one. I was thinking Norfolk State because of the rivalry with Hampton and the fact that Norfolk State is in the city of Norfolk, which is the largest city in the state of Virginia. But then again, you know, they can maintain that rivalry without necessarily moving out of the conference.
Okay, Jay, what about you, Jay?
You're asking me, Jay?
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I think some of those are legitimate. You know, they're having been associated with the CAA because my son played at William & Mary the last few years and, you know, watching that conference. Now, they just took in Hampton. They just took in Monmouth. They just – you know, even though they lost James Madison, that is one of the premier conferences in FCS. You know, the Big Sky is the premier conference in the FCS, but you know, you're not going to get any HBCUs out there because it's too far. You know, where they're a strong conference, the conference that North Dakota State is in with is another really strong conference that has all those schools in it. You know, the Ohio Valley is where Tennessee State is in, and you know, they have some good schools there. But the Missouri Valley, you know, is a tough league, and you know, North Dakota State has won, you know, 6 or 7 national championships in a row, and no one in 1AA has been able to compete with them, and they get players somehow black, white, wherever to go to that school. And I think it has a lot to do with their boosters. They're satisfied staying at that level. And, you know, their facilities are really good. And they feed those kids and have them on training table and, you know, let them be able to compete day in and day out. That's all part of it, you know. What everyone's talking about, your facilities, how well you prepare your players to go out day in and day out and you know, build their bodies and build their minds so that they can go to the next level. You know, a lot of the places that people are saying, well, you know, these guys put people in pro football has a lot to do with the region they're in. You know, I unfortunately.
Hey Jay, we have about a minute left before we go over to the next thing. So if you could kind of close it out, and I can ask Ricky the last part of it.
I'll just stop. I'll just
okay. Yeah. Ricky, same question. 1 minute.
You know, I think the first part was about the MEAC, and you know, Duck, I think the MEAC is probably pretty stable right now. I mean, they've lost some teams. I know, I think Bethune-Cookman and Florida State. I mean, Florida A&M have gone over to the SWAC. And you've lost some. I think they're kind of stable for right now. But to make it short, I mean, this is something we could talk about all day. I really don't want to see the HBCUs disband. I really don't. I just think it's too much tradition. But if all the Mid-American schools, the levels that they can go in and play, they'll take their bumps for the, you know, a couple years until they get their facilities up at least into the Mid-American kind of level and get the talent in there. I think that if one or two teams, if they did branch out, if they had to disband it and go into other leagues where they may only take one HBCU school or something like that, that school will take its bumps for a couple years. But then eventually I think their facilities will have to grow. They have to come up to the standards of that conference. And, again, I hate to see the HBCUs, you know, fall apart. But it almost just reminds you of the Negro League, you know. I don't know if it's time for that yet, or is it? Can we fight through this and get the money that Jones talked about of getting that money from big boosters and people to kind of keep the tradition going? So, like I said, we could talk about this all day, and you know, it's a good subject.
Okay, we'll let Princess take us on, Princess.
All right, thanks, guys. We appreciate everything and in the conversation. We must, you know, maybe continue this next week for sure. Never Had It So Good Sports Talk Radio. We're going to get out of the way for Sports Talk Atlanta right here on Never Had It So Good Sports Radio. You guys have a great evening.
You too, Princess. Thanks.
Bye, Ricky.
Bye, Princess.